but I won't say what I hoped for. Is motherhood really optional when you're a perfectly normal woman married to a perfectly normal man? When I was in college, I took on a volunteer position at a literacy organization and tutored teen mothers. It was hard work and tended to be disheartening, as the young women seldom earned their diplomas. My supervisor said to me over espresso and croissants, "Have a baby and save the race." He was smiling, but he wasn't kidding. If girls like this are having all the kids and girls like you stay childless and fancy-free, what's going to happen to us as a people? Without thinking, I promised to do my part. This is not to say that I didn't want to be a mother. It's not to say that I did. This is only to say that I was certain that the check would come due. So while Roy slept with confidence, I closed my eyes with trepidation. I was still awake when the door burst open. I know they kicked it in, but the written report says that a front desk clerk handed over the key and the door was opened in a civilized manner. But who knows what is true? I remember my husband asleep in our room while a woman 6 years older than his mother says she slept lightly in room 206, worried because the door didn't seem quite secure. She told herself she was being paranoid, but couldn't convince her eyes to stay closed. Before midnight, a man twisted the knob, knowing that he could. It was dark, but she believed she recognized Roy, the man she met at the ice machine, the man who told her he had been fighting with his wife. She said that this was not her first time finding herself at the mercy of a man, but it would be the last. Roy, she said, may be smart, and he may have learned by watching TV how to cover his tracks, but he couldn't erase her memory. But she couldn't erase mine either. Roy was with me all night. She doesn't know who hurt her, but I know who I married. I married Roy Othaniel Hamilton, whom I met for the first time when I was in college. Our connection wasn't immediate. He considered himself a playboy in those days, and even at age 19, I was not one to play with. I'd come to Spelman as a transfer student after the one-year disaster at Howard University in D.C. So much for me leaving home. My mother, an alumna herself, insisted that this was where I would cultivate new, bone-deep friendships, but I stuck close with Andre, who was literally the boy next door. We had been close since we were 3 months old, bathing together in the kitchen sink. Andre was the one who introduced me to Roy, although it wasn't quite on purpose. They had been next-door neighbors in Thurman Hall on the far side of campus. I often stayed nights in Andre's room, strictly platonic, although no one believed us. He slept atop the covers while I huddled under the blankets. None of it makes sense now, but this is how Dre and I always were. Before Roy and I were properly introduced, a sex-breathy voice on the other side of the wall pronounced his whole name.
"Roy Othaniel Hamilton."
Andre said, "You think he asked her to say that?" I snorted. "Othaniel? Doesn't strike me as a spontaneous utterance." We giggled as the twin bed thumped against the wall. "I think she's faking it." "If she is," Andre said, "then they all are." I didn't meet Roy in person for another month. Again, I was in Andre's room. Roy came by at 10 a.m. trying to hustle up some change to do his laundry. He came in without the courtesy of a knock. "Oh, excuse me, ma'am," Roy said in a way that sounded like a surprised question. "My sister," Andre said. "Play sister?" Roy wanted to know, sizing up the dynamic. "If you want to know who I am, ask me." I must have looked a sight, wearing Andre's maroon and white t-shirt and my hair tucked beneath a satin bonnet, but I had to speak up for myself. "Okay, who are you?"
"Celestial Davenport."
"I'm Roy Hamilton." "Roy Othaniel Hamilton, from what I hear through the wall." After that, he and I stared at each other, waiting for a cue to show us what type of story this was going to be. Finally, he looked away and asked Andre for a case quarter. I flipped over on my stomach, bent my knees, and crossed my legs at the ankle. "You something else," Roy said. When Roy was gone, Andre said, "You know that Gomer Pyle thing is an act." "Clearly," I said. Something about him was dangerous. And after my experience at Howard, I wanted no part of danger. I suppose it wasn't our time because I didn't speak with or even think about Roy Othaniel Hamilton again for another 4 years, when college felt like a photo album memory from another era. When we reconnected, it wasn't that he was so different. It's just that what felt like peril then now morphed into something that I labeled realness, something for which I developed a bottomless appetite. But what is real? Was it our uneventful first impression? Or the day in New York, of all places, where we found each other once again? Or did things get real when we married? Or was it the day that the prosecutor in a little nowhere town declared Roy to be a flight risk? The state declared that though he may have roots in Louisiana, his home was in Atlanta, so he was held without bond or bail. At this pronouncement, Roy spat out a caustic laugh. "So now roots are irrelevant?" Our lawyer, friend of my family, but paid handsomely just the same, promised me that I wasn't going to lose my man. Uncle Banks made motions, filed papers, and objected. But still, Roy slept behind bars 100 nights before he was brought to trial. For 1 month, I remained in Louisiana, living with my in-laws, sleeping in the room that could have saved us this trouble. I waited and I sewed. I called Andre. I called my parents. When I sent the mayor his doll, I couldn't bring myself to seal the flaps on the sturdy cardboard box. Big Roy did it for me, and the memory of ripping tape troubled my sleep that night and many nights to come. "If this doesn't go the way we want it to," Roy said the day before his trial, "I don't want you to wait for me. Keep making your dolls and doing what you need to do." "This is going to work out," I promised. "You didn't do it." "I'm looking at so much time. I can't ask you to throw your life away for me." His words and his eyes were speaking two different languages, like someone saying no while nodding his head yes. "No one is going to throw anything away," I said. I had faith in those days. I believed in things. Andre showed up for us. He had been a witness at our wedding and a character witness at trial. Dre let me cut his hair, handing me the scissors to saw through the dreads that he had been growing for the last 4 years. At our wedding, they had been rebellious little nubs, but when I cut them off, they were finally responding to gravity, pointing toward his collar. When I was done, he walked his fingers through the choppy curls that remained. The next day, we took our seats in the courtroom, costumed to seem as innocent as possible. My parents were there, and Roy's too. Olive was dressed for church, and Big Roy sat beside her looking poor but honest. Like Andre, my own father groomed himself, and he, for once, appeared to be equally yoked to my elegant mother. Watching Roy, I could see he was an obvious match for us. It wasn't just the cut of his coat or the break of his hem against the fine leather of his shoes. It was his face, shaven clean, and his eyes, innocent and afraid, unaccustomed to being at the mercy of the state. The time in the county jail shrank him. The boyish chub of his cheek was gone, revealing a squared-off jaw that I didn't know he had. Strangely enough, the leanness made him look more powerful than wasted. The only thing that gave him away as a man on trial, rather than a man on his way to work, was his poor fingers. He'd chewed his nails down to the soft meat and started in on his cuticles. "Sweet Roy, the only thing that my good man ever hurt was his own hands." What I know is this. They didn't believe me. 12 people, and not one of them took me at my word. There, in front of the room, I explained Roy couldn't have raped the woman in room 206 because we had been together. I told them about the magic fingers that wouldn't work, about the movie that played on the snowy television. The prosecutor asked me what we had been fighting about. Rattled, I looked to Roy and to both our mothers. Banks objected, so I didn't have to answer, but the pause made it appear that I was concealing something rotten at the pit of our very young marriage. Even before I stepped down from the witness stand, I knew that I had failed him. Maybe I wasn't appealing enough, not dramatic enough, too not from around here, who knows. Uncle Banks, coaching me, said now is not the time to be articulate, now is the time to give it up. No filter, all heart. No matter what you're asked, what you want the jury to see is why you married him. I tried, but I didn't know how to be anything other than well-spoken in front of strangers. I wish I could have brought a selection of my art, the Man Moving series, all images of Roy, the marble, the dolls, and a few watercolors. I would say, this is who he is to me. Isn't he beautiful? Isn't he gentle? But all I had were words, which are as light and flimsy as air. As I took my seat beside Andre, not even the black lady juror would look at me. It turns out that I watched too much television. I was expecting a scientist to come and testify about DNA. I was looking for a pair of good-looking detectives to burst into the courtroom at the last minute, whispering something urgent to the prosecutor. Everyone would see that this was a big mistake, a major misunderstanding. We would all be shaken, but appeased. I fully believed that I would leave the courtroom with my husband beside me. Secure in our home, we would tell people how no black man is really safe in America. 12 years is what they gave him. We would be 43 years old when he was released. I couldn't even imagine myself at such an age. Roy understood that 12 years was an eternity because he sobbed right there at the defendant's table. His knees gave way and he fell into his chair. The judge paused and demanded that Roy bear this news on his feet. He stood again and cried, not like a baby, but in the way that only a grown man can cry, from the bottom of his feet up through his torso and finally through his mouth. When a man wails like that, you know it's all the tears that he was never allowed to shed, from little league disappointment to teenage heartbreak, all the way to whatever injured his spirit just last year. As Roy howled, my fingers kept wearing a rough patch of skin beneath my chin, a souvenir of scar tissue. When they did what I remember as kicking in the door, what everyone else remembers as opening it with a plastic key, after the door was opened, however it was opened, we were both pulled from the bed. They dragged Roy into the parking lot, and I followed, lunging for him, wearing nothing but the white slip. Somebody pushed me to the ground, and my chin hit the pavement. My slip rode up, showing my everything to everyone as my tooth sank into the soft of my bottom lip. Roy was on the asphalt beside me, barely beyond my grasp, speaking words that didn't reach my ears. I don't know how long we lay there, parallel, like burial plots. Husband, wife. What God has brought together, let no man tear asunder.
Dear Roy, I'm writing this letter sitting at the kitchen table. I'm alone in a way that's more than the fact that I am the only living person within these walls. Up until now, I thought I knew what was and wasn't possible. Maybe that's what innocence is, having no way to predict the pain of the future. When something happens that eclipses the imaginable, it changes a person. It's like the difference between a raw egg and a scrambled egg. It's the same thing, but it's not the same at all. That's the best way I can put it. I look in the mirror and I know it's me, but I can't quite recognize myself. Sometimes it's exhausting for me to simply walk into the house. I try and calm myself, remember that I've lived alone before. Sleeping by myself didn't kill me then and will not kill me now. But this is what loss has taught me of love. Our house isn't simply empty. Our home has been emptied. Love makes a place in your life. It makes a place for itself in your bed. Invisibly, it makes a place in your body, rerouting all your blood vessels, throbbing right alongside your heart. When it's gone, nothing is whole again. Before I met you, I was not lonely. But now I'm so lonely I talk to the walls and sing to the ceiling. They said that you can't receive mail for at least a month. Still, I'll write to you every night. Yours, Celestial.
Roy O. Hamilton, Jr., PRA 485-6932, Parson Correctional Center, 3751 Lauderdale Woodyard Road, Jemison, Louisiana, 70648. Dear Celestial, a.k.a. Georgia, I don't think I've written a letter to anyone since I was in high school and assigned a French pen pal. That whole thing lasted about 10 minutes. I know for sure that this is the first time I ever wrote a love letter, and that's what this is going to be. Celestial, I love you. I miss you. I want to come home to you. Look at me, telling you the things you already know. I'm trying to write something on this paper that will make you remember me, the real me, not the man you saw standing in a broke-down country courtroom, broke down myself. I was too ashamed to turn toward you, but now I wish I had, because right now I would do anything for one more look. This love letter thing is uphill for me. I have never even seen one, unless you count the third grade. Do you like me? With a space to check yes or no. Don't answer that. A love letter is supposed to be like music or like Shakespeare. But I don't know anything about Shakespeare. But for real, I want to tell you what you mean to me. But it's like trying to count the seconds of a day on your fingers and toes. Why didn't I write you love letters all the while so I could be in practice? Then I would know what to do. That's how I feel every day here. Like, I don't know what to do or how to do it. I've always let you know how much I care, right? You never had to wonder. I'm not a man for words. My daddy showed me that you do for a woman. Remember that time when you damn near had a nervous breakdown because it looked like the hickory nut tree in the front yard was thinking about dying? Where I'm from, we don't believe in spending money on pets, let alone trees. But I couldn't bear to see you fret, so I hired a tree doctor. See, in my mind, that was a love letter. The first thing I did as your husband was to sit you down, like the old folks say. You were wasting your time and your talents doing temp work. You wanted to sew, so I made it happen. No strings. That was my love letter to say, I got this. Make your art. Rest yourself. Whatever you need to do. But now all I have is this paper and this raggedy ink pen. It's a ballpoint. But they take away the casing, so you just have the nib and this plastic tube of ink. I'm looking at it thinking, this is all I have to be a husband with? But here I am trying. Love, Roy. Dear Georgia, hello from Mars. That's not really a joke. The dorms here are all named for planets. This is the truth. I couldn't make this up. Your letters were delivered to me yesterday. Each and every one, and I was very happy to receive them. Overjoyed. I am not sure even where to start. I haven't even been here 3 months, and already I've had 3 cell partners. The one I have now says he's here for good, and he says it like he has some type of inside track. His name is Walter. He's been incarcerated for most of his adult life, so he knows what's what around here. I write letters for him, but not gratis. It's not that I'm not compassionate, but you get no respect when you do things for free. This I learned in the workforce, and it's 10 times as true in here. Walter doesn't have money, so I let him give me cigarettes. Don't make that face. I know you, girl. I don't smoke them. I trade them for other things, like ramen noodles. I kid you not. The letters I write for Walter are to women he meets through personal ads. You would be surprised how many ladies want a pen pal with convicts. Don't get jealous, ha ha. Sometimes I get irritated, staying up so late answering all his questions. He says he used to live in Elo, so he wants me to bring him up to date. When I say that I haven't lived in Elo since before I went to college, he says he has never set foot on a college campus, and he wants me to tell him all about that, too. He was even curious about how I got the name Roy. It's not like my name is Patrice Lumumba, something that needs explaining, but Walter is what Olive would call a character. We call him the Ghetto Yoda because he's always getting philosophical. I accidentally said Country Yoda, and he got mad. I swear it was an honest mistake, and it's one I won't make again. But it's all good. He looks out for me saying that us bow-legged brothers got to stick together. You should see his legs, worse than mine. So that's all I got in terms of atmosphere, or all that I want you to know about. Don't ask me questions about the details. Just suffice it to say that it's bad in here. Even if you kill somebody, you don't deserve to spend more than a couple of years in this place. Please tell your uncle to get on it. There's so much here that makes you stop and say, Like, there are about 1,500 men in this facility, mostly brothers, and that's the same number of students at Deer Morehouse. I don't want to be some kind of crazy conspiracy nut, but it's hard not to think about things in that way. For one, prison is full of people who call themselves dropping science. And second, things here are so bent that you think somebody must be bending it on purpose. My mother wrote to me, too, and you know her theory, the devil stays busy. My dad thinks it's the Klan. Well, not the Klan specifically with hoods and crosses, but more like America-KKK-a. I don't know what I think, besides thinking that I miss you. I finally got to make my visitors list, and right at the top is you, Celestial Gloriana Davenport. They want your full government name. I'll put Dre on, too. Does he have a middle name? It's probably something religious, like Elijah. You know he's my boy, but when you come the first time, come by yourself. Meanwhile, keep the letters flowing, baby. How did I forget that you have such a pretty handwriting? If you decide not to be a famous artist, you could go be a school teacher with that penmanship. You must bear down on the pen because the paper buckles. At night, when the light's out, not that they are ever really out, they make it dark enough that you can't read, but too light to really sleep. But when they cut the lights off, I run my fingers over your letters and try to read them like Braille. Romantic, right? And thank you for putting money on my books. You have to buy everything you think you might want in here. Underwear, socks, whatever you need to try and make your life a little better. This isn't a hint, but it would be nice to have a clock radio. And of course, the main thing that would make my life a little better would be seeing you. Love, Roy. P.S. When I first started calling you Georgia, it was because I could tell you were homesick. Now I call you that because I'm the one missing home. And home is you.
Dear Roy, by the time you get this letter, I will have already been to visit because I'm mailing it on the way out of town. Andre has filled the tank and the car is stocked with snacks. I have practically memorized the visitor's guide. There are clothing regulations and they are extremely specific. My favorite detail is that gauchos and culottes are strictly prohibited. I bet you don't even know what those are. I recall them being very fashionable when I was in the fourth grade, and thankfully they have never come back in style. To summarize the dress code, show no skin. Don't wear an underwire bra unless you want to fail the metal detector test and get sent home. I imagine it's like going to the airport, on your way to a convent, but I'm ready. It goes without saying that I know this country and I know history. I even remember a man who came to speak at Spelman who had been wrongfully imprisoned for decades. Did you see him? He spoke along with the white woman who pointed the finger at him in the first place. They both got saved or something. Even though they stood right there in front of me, they felt like a lesson from the past, a phantom from Mississippi. What did it have to do with us, college students piled in the chapel for convocation credit? Now I wish I could remember what they said. I'm bringing this up because I knew that things like this happened to people, but by people, I didn't mean us. Do you ever think about the one who accused you? I wish I could have a sit-down with her. Somebody attacked her in that room. I don't think she's making that up. You could tell that just from her voice. But that somebody wasn't you. Now she's going back to Chicago or whatever, wishing she never stopped in Elo, Louisiana, and she isn't the only one. But you don't need me to tell you this. You know where you are, and you know what you didn't do. Uncle Banks is preparing the first appeal. He reminds me that it could be worse. Many people have run-ins with the law, and they don't live to tell the tale. There's no appealing a cop's bullet. So at least there's that, but it's not much. Do you know that I'm praying for you? Can you feel it at night when I get down on my knees beside my bed like I did when I was a little girl? I close my eyes and I can picture you the way you were when we were last together, all the way down to the freckle over your eyebrow. I have a notebook where I wrote down every word that we said to each other before we fell asleep that night. I wrote it down so when you get home, we can pick up where we left off. True confession. I am extremely nervous. I know it's not the same, but it reminds me of when we were first going out, when we were trying to be a long-distance couple and you sent me a ticket. After all the build-up with our phone conversations and email, I wasn't sure what to expect when we finally saw each other again. Obviously, it all worked out, but I feel the same way writing this letter. So I want to say in advance that even if things are awkward between us when we finally lay eyes on each other, please know that it's because it's all very new and I'm so agitated. Nothing has changed. I love you as much as I did the day I married you. And I will always. Yours, Celestial.
Dear Georgia, thank you for coming to visit me. I know it wasn't easy to get here. When I saw you sitting there in the visitor's room all classy and out of place, I have never been happier to see anyone. I could have cried like a little girl. I won't lie, it was strange to have to see each other for the first time in front of so many people. And the truth is that I was quiet because you said that you didn't want to talk about what was really on my mind. I didn't push it because I didn't want to ruin our time together. And it wasn't ruined. I was very glad to see you. Walter teased me all the next day about being lit up like a Christmas tree. But I'm sorry, Celestial. I have to tell you what has been troubling my soul. I know that I said that I didn't want any son of mine having to say his daddy was in jail. You know, I don't know much about my biological father except his name, and that he is probably a criminal. But since Big Roy raised me as his own, I didn't have to wear shame around my neck like a giant clock. Sometimes, though, in the back of my mind, I could hear that clock ticking. I was also thinking about this kid I knew named Myron, whose father was in Angola. Myron was teeny tiny, and his clothes were all donated by the church. One time I saw him in one of my cast-off jackets. They nicknamed him Chicky because his daddy was a jailbird. To this day, he answers to Chicky like it's his real name. But our kid would have had Mr. D and Gloria, Andre, and my family, too. That's a village and a half right there to take care of him until I win my freedom. He would have been something else for me to look forward to. I can see why he didn't want to talk about it. What's done is done, but I can't stop thinking about him. Of course, I don't know that the baby was a boy, but my gut is telling me he was my junior. This is painful to ask, but if we had more faith, would things have worked out differently? What if it was a test? What if we kept the baby? I could have made it home in time to see him crown into the world, innocent and bald-headed. This whole ordeal would just be a story we would tell him when he was older, to teach him how to be careful as a black man in these United States. When we decided to have the abortion, it was like we were accepting that things weren't going to work out in the courtroom. And when we gave up, God gave up on us, too. Not that he ever gives up, but you know what I mean. You don't have to answer this, but tell me. Who knows about it? It doesn't matter, but I'm curious. I put your parents on my visitors list, and I wonder if they know what we did. Georgia, I know I can't make you talk about what you don't want to talk about, but you should know what it was that was blocking my throat so I couldn't hardly talk. Still, it was beautiful to see you. I love you more than I can say here. Your husband, Roy.
Dear Roy, yes, baby, yes, I think about it, but not constantly. You can't sit with something like that every single day. But when I do, it is with sadness more than regret. I understand that you're in pain, but please do not ever send me another letter like the one you sent last week. Have you forgotten the county jail? It smelled like pee and bleach and all these desperate women and kids surrounding us. Your complexion was so gray that you looked like you had been powdered over with ashes. Your hands were rough like alligator skin, and you couldn't get any cream to stop the cracking and bleeding. Have you forgotten all of that? Uncle Banks had to find you a new suit because you dropped so much weight waiting for your speedy trial. You were your own ghost. When I told you I was pregnant, it wasn't good news. Not in the way it should have been. I hoped the idea would stir you, bring you back to this life. You did come back, but only to moan into your tight fists. Remember your own words. You can't have it. Not like this. This is what you said to me. Your grip on my wrist so tight, my fingers tingled. You can't tell me that you didn't mean what you said. You didn't mention a boy named Chicky or your real dad, but I saw the forest, if not the trees. This is something that I was sure about at the time, and I'm still mostly sure about now. I don't want to be a mother of a child born against his father's wishes. And you made your wishes clear? Roy, you know I hated to do it. However much it hurts you, remember that I am the one it happened to. I am the one who was pregnant. I'm the one who isn't pregnant anymore. Whatever you feel, think about what I must feel. Just like you say, I don't know what it is like to be in prison. You don't know what it's like to go to a clinic and sign your name in the book. I'm dealing with it in the way that I do through my work. I've been sewing like a crazy person late at night. The dolls remind me of a doll I had when I was little, when you could go to Cleveland, Georgia, and adopt a baby. They were a little beyond our means, but Gloria and I went out there to at least have a look. When we saw all the dolls on display, I said, "Is this summer camp for dolls?" And she said, "No, it was like an orphanage." I was so sheltered, I didn't even know what an orphan was. And when she explained, I sobbed and asked to take all the dolls home. I don't think of my dolls as orphans. They're babies that happen to live in my sewing room. I've made 42 so far. I'm thinking I'll try and sell them at craft fairs. At cost, about $50 each. These are for children, not collectors. And truth be told, I want to get them out of the house. I can't have them staring at me all day. But I can't stop making them either. You ask me who knows. Are you asking me who knows what I did? Or who knows that you asked me to? You think I took out a billboard? If you're a grown woman and you have more than $10 in the bank, nobody understands why you can't have a baby. But how could I think about being a mother with my husband in prison? I know you're innocent. There is not one doubt in my mind, but I also know that you're not here. This isn't a game, a drill, or a movie. I don't know that it hit me until I was 2 weeks late and getting ready to pee on a stick. I didn't tell anyone but Andre. All he said was, "You can't go by yourself." He drove me and he covered my head with his jacket as we made our way past the chanting demonstrators and their disgusting signs. When it was done, he was waiting for me. Afterward, in the car, he said something that I want to share with you. He said, "Don't cry. This isn't your last chance." Roy, he's right. You and I will have babies in the future. We will be parents. Like they say, a girl for you, a boy for me, or was it the other way around? But when you get out, we can have 10 babies if that's what you want. I promise you that. I love you. I miss you. Yours, Celestial.
Dear Georgia, I know I said that I would let this go, but I have one more thing to say. We took our family and pulled it out by the roots. Reading your letter, you make it sound like I forced you. Like you came into the county jail excited to be having my child. You said, "I'm pregnant," like it was cancer. What was I supposed to say? And besides, let's say that I did push you in one particular direction. Don't act like you were being an obedient little woman. I'll never forget our wedding when, in front of everyone, You got into a stare down with the minister who asked you to say the word obey. If he didn't back down, we would still be standing at the altar on the outskirts of matrimony. That day at the county, we had a discussion, you and me. Two grown people. It was not about me telling you what to do. As soon as I mentioned the idea of not keeping the baby, I saw the relief on your face. I loosened my grip and you snatched the ball and ran with it. Everything you remember is true. I said what I said, but you didn't try and argue the other side. You didn't say that we could make it. You didn't say that this was a child we created. You didn't say that maybe I could be free by the time he was born. You tucked your head and said, I can do what has to be done. Yes, I get it. Your body, your choice. All of that they taught you at Spelman College. Fine. But we should have known there would be some consequences. I'll take responsibility for my role in it, but it wasn't me by myself. Love, Roy.
Dear Roy, some background. In college, my roommate told me that men want a woman to be a virgin with experience, and therefore you should never talk about your past relationships with a man because he wants to pretend like they never happened. So I know that you're not going to want to hear this, but I feel like you're forcing me to share this sad story. Roy, you know that I spent a year at Howard University before Spelman, but you don't know why I left. At Howard, I took Art of the African Diaspora, and my teacher, Raul Gomez, was the diaspora himself. A black man from Honduras, he spoke Spanish when he was excited, and he was always excited about art. He said that the reason he didn't finish his dissertation was because he couldn't bear to write about Elizabeth Catlett in English. He was 40, married, and handsome. I was 18, flattered, and dumb as a box of rocks. When I figured out that I was pregnant, we were unofficially engaged. I had no ring, but I had his word. But there is always a but, isn't it? But he needed to get divorced, and he didn't think that after 12 years of marriage, his wife should have to bear the shame of a love child. And here I was, encouraged that he used the word love. I believe that you know where this story is going. It's clear to me, too, looking back on it. I was recovering when he came to my dorm room to tell me that we were done. He was all dressed up in a dark blue suit and a tie the color of ashes. I was wearing sweatpants and a baggy t-shirt. He showed up outfitted like the Harlem Renaissance, and I didn't even have shoes on my feet. He said, "You're a beautiful girl. You turned my head and made me forget right from wrong." And then he left. He was gone, and I was gone, too. It was like I slipped on a patch of ice on a dark road inside my own mind. I stopped going to his class, and then I stopped going to all classes. After a couple of weeks, one of my dad's friends from the chemistry department alerted my parents. Black colleges are serious about that in loco parentis thing. My folks were up to D.C. faster than you can say civil lawsuit. Yes, Uncle Banks was the attorney. The suit was frivolous, but the goal was for Raul to lose his job. The experience broke me down, Roy. I came back to Atlanta and just sat there for a month. Andre would come over, and I didn't even want to talk to him. My parents were seriously thinking about sending me somewhere. It was Sylvia who snapped me out of it. Every girl needs a wise and reassuring aunt. I was telling her the same kinds of things that you're telling me now. How I thought I jinxed my own life. That if I had been brave enough to keep the baby, I would have been rewarded with what I really hoped for, which was to be Mrs. Gomez. That life was a test that I kept failing. Sylvia said, "I am not about to judge you. That's between you and Jesus. Sugar, tell me the honest truth. Do you wish you had a baby right now?" I really couldn't say. The main thing was that I didn't want to feel the way I was feeling. Then Sylvia said, "When you took the test, were you hoping for a plus or a minus?" And I said, "Minus." So she said, "Look, what is over with is over with. What are you going to do? Get in a time machine? Go back to last fall and unfuck him?" And then she pulled out a dozen socks, embroidery thread, and cotton batting. This part of the story, you know, everyone does. She showed me how to make the sock dolls that would be donated to Grady Hospital to comfort the crack babies. We went over there sometimes and held the poor little ones who were so strung out that they rattled in my arms. It wasn't charity. I sewed those first dolls to work the guilt out of my system. I never thought of poupées, commissions, contests, or exhibitions. I felt like every time I made something to comfort a motherless infant, I was repaying the universe for what I did. After a while, the dolls in D.C. weren't connected anymore. I had a weight pressing on my soul, and I dolled my way out from under it. But I didn't forget, promising myself I would never find myself in that predicament again. For a while, I was scared to try, thinking that maybe I ruined myself. Not in a medical way, but in a spiritual one. Roy, I know that we had a choice, but really, we didn't have a choice. I mourned as though I had miscarried. My body apparently was fertile soil, but my life was not. You may feel that you're carrying a burden, but I shoulder a load as well. So now you know. We are bearing two different crosses. And can we please, please, please stop talking about it? If you care for me at all, you will never bring this up again. Yours, Celestial.
Dear Georgia, 2 years down and 10 to go. This is my idea of a joke. Finally, Banks will go forward with the appeal. I hate thinking about how much money your parents are shelling out for this. They are getting a friends and family rate, but still, I imagine the number clicking by like an odometer. But if things go well with the state appellate court, I'll be out of here and I'll take whatever job I can find and pay your daddy back. Seriously, I don't care if I have to bag groceries. See, this is why I like letters better than email. Anything I write down is a promissory note and a paper receipt. Signed, sealed, delivered. We can only get email in the library for 65 minutes a week, and there's always someone waiting or someone looking over your shoulder. Besides, I like to use that time to write emails for hire. You know what I got paid with last week? An onion. I know you're going to think this is crazy, but onion is rare to come by in here, and prison cuisine tastes better with a little bit of flavoring. To get it, I wrote a long email for this guy. It was part mash note and part fundraising pitch. If it yielded the cash he was hoping for, he was going to get me an onion. Of course, I split the onion with Walter, since he acted as a broker for the whole exchange. You should have seen it. If the hunchback of Notre Dame could be a vegetable, it would be that funky little onion. You don't want to know what we cooked up in our cell that night, but I know you're curious, so I'll try and explain. It's a casserole that you make out of ramen noodles, crunched up Doritos, onion, and Vienna sausages. Everybody chips in what they have, and when it's done, you divide it up. Walter is the chef. I promise that it tastes better than it sounds. Another thing about paper letters is that I can write them at night. I wish more folks were in the market for old-fashioned mail because it could be a little cottage industry. The problem is that people on the outside don't write back, and the whole point of sending a letter is to get something in return. Email is different. Most anyone will at least shoot back a response, no matter how short. You always answer my letters, and you know I appreciate it. Can you send me some pictures? I want some photos from before and a couple of new ones. Love, Roy.
Dear Roy, I got your letter yesterday. Did you get mine? As promised, here are a few photos. The snapshots from back in the day you will recognize. I can't believe how thin I was. Since you asked for them, here are some new ones. Andre is into photography these days, so that's why they look so artsy and serious. He's not about to quit his day job, but I think he's good. I think this is all due to his girlfriend, a 21-year-old who thinks she can make a living making documentaries. But who am I to talk? I'm in my 30s and I earn my living doll making. Besides, if Dre likes it, I dig it, and Dre is smitten. But 21? She makes me feel like a senior citizen. Speaking of old, these pictures. You can see that I have put on some weight. My parents are both slim, but it's like some recessive gene snuck up on me and smacked me on my behind. It's my own fault. I've been sewing like crazy, which means I spend the whole day sitting down. But I have so many orders to fill. Things have reached critical mass, and I've taken steps to secure a retail space. It's not quite like you imagine, more boutique than toy store. Think of it as high-end for toys, but low-end for art. I have to say that it's rewarding to give a pretty brown doll to a pretty brown girl and watch her squeeze and kiss it. It's different from watching a collector take it away in a wooden crate. I wonder if maybe I'm compromising. It's art, but not art. Look at me, worried about selling out before I even hang out my shingle. And speaking of money, I think you know what I'm going to say next. I have exactly one investor, and it is my father. Because he is sinking so much capital into it, we put everything in his name. I had to remind him that a silent partner is supposed to be quiet. He wanted the sign to say, Pooh Pays, P-O-U-P-A-Y-S, so people would know how to pronounce it. Ha, no. I know that we plan to start a business ourselves, without assistance, but things happen. And besides, my parents want to do this for me. All this hard-headed independence isn't helping me or anyone else. Daddy and I went to the bank. We talked to a real estate broker. Assuming there are no hiccups, Poupées will open up in about 6 months. It's not our dream, but it's dream adjacent. Like Daddy says, I could make some real money. Okay, back to the pictures. I keep changing the subject because I don't really like the way that they came out. I feel like they showed too much. Maybe you know what I mean? This is what I appreciate about Dre's work. As long as the photos are of other people. He took a picture of my father and you could see the last 50 years in the lines of his forehead. Everything was there. Alabama, fatherhood, his whole black Horatio Alger thing. He doesn't like his portrait either, but I think it's stunning. The pictures I chose are all rated PG, so you can pass them around, but when I look at them, I really hope you will keep them to yourself. Show your friends the old pictures. Please tell your friend Walter that I said hello, and I hope to meet him. He sounds like a good guy. Does he have family? If you want me to, I can send some money for his books. I don't like to think about folks in there without any little creature comforts. I can do it under Andre's name if you want it to be anonymous. I know how proud people can be. Tell me what you think is best. Yours, Celestial.
Dear Georgia, you are the greatest gift of my life. I miss everything about you, even your sleeping bonnet that I used to complain about. I miss your cooking. I miss your perfect shape. I miss your natural hair. More than anything, I miss your singing. The one thing I don't miss is how we fought so much. I can't believe we wasted so much time fussing over nothing. I think about every time I hurt you. I think about the times when I could have made you feel secure, but I let you worry simply because I liked being worried about. I think about that, and I feel like a damn fool. A damn lonesome fool. Please forgive, and please keep loving me. You don't know how demoralizing it is to be a man with nothing to offer a woman. I think of you out there, and there are so many dudes in Atlanta with their Atlanta briefcases and Atlanta jobs and Atlanta degrees. Trapped in here, I can't give you anything. But I can offer up my soul, and that's the realest thing. At night, if I concentrate, I can touch your body with my mind. I wonder if you can feel it in your sleep. It's a shame that it took me being locked up, stripped of everything that I ever cared about, for me to realize that it is possible to touch someone without touching them. I can make myself feel closer to you than I felt when we were actually lying in bed next to each other. I wake up in the morning exhausted, because it takes a lot out of me to leave my body like that. I know it sounds crazy, but I'm asking you to try it. Please try to touch me with your mind. Let me see how it feels. Love. Roy. Dear Georgia, please forgive me if my last letter was a little out there. I didn't mean to freak you out. Ha. Please write me back. Roy.
Dear Roy, I'm not freaked out. I'm just really busy these last few weeks. Things are really looking up for my career. I hate using that word, career. It always feels like the word bitch is hiding out between the letters. But I know that I'm being paranoid. The point is that things are really heating up. There is talk about a solo show. I didn't want to tell you about it until things were set in stone, but now they are set in, say, Play-Doh. But here is my news. Remember my Man Moving series? Now it's called I Am a Man. The show is all of the portraits I have made of you over the years, starting with the marble. They might give me a show in New York. The key word is might. But I'm very excited and very busy. Andre's doing all my slides and graphic design stuff. Everything looks perfect, but I wish he would accept a real payment. I know we are like family, but I don't want to take advantage of him. It has been demanding, but working all day with images of you makes me feel like I'm spending time with you, and sometimes I forget to write. Please forgive. and know that you're on my mind. Yours, C.
Dear Georgia, my mother says you're famous. Confirm or deny. Love, Roy.
Dear Roy, I must be famous if word has made it to Hilo, Louisiana. I guess the entire Negro nation subscribes to Ebony. I don't know if you have seen the article, but even if you have, let me explain. Even if you haven't, I want you to understand exactly what happened. I told you that my doll won a contest at the National Portrait Museum. What I didn't tell you was that the portrait was of you. Your mother asked for a doll based on your baby picture, the black and white studio portrait in your bedroom. I promised it to her, and I worked on it for 3 months to get the chin right. She even provided your original outfit. It was surreal, dressing the doll in the clothes your mother had intended for her grandson to wear. The whole thing was deep. I promised that I was going to give it to her, but I left it at home. Just a stupid mistake. So I was going to send it to her for Valentine's, but I couldn't let it go. You know how I am, a perfectionist on the commissions. Something about it was too easy, too on the nose. She asked me about it 1,000 times, and I kept telling her it was coming. What's next is complicated, so let me back up. Since you've been away, my mother and I have been spending more time together. At first, it was just so I wouldn't be alone in the house. But now we visit like girlfriends, talking and drinking wine. Sometimes she even sleeps over. One night, she told me how she and her family came to live in Atlanta. It was a long story, and I was tired, but every time I drifted asleep, she tapped me awake. The story starts when my mother was a baby in a pram. Nana had taken her grocery shopping, which was always stressful because my grandparents had a lot of needs and not a lot of money. Sometimes they took credit at the general store, and that hurt my grandmother's dignity. And you know how debt can spiral out of control. While Nana was in the store trying to calculate the least amount of food she could buy to take care of the whole family, they crossed the path of a white woman and her child. My mother talks bad about these white people, and she talks about them in detail, as if she could actually remember them. She says that they were trashy, smelled of camphor, and the little girl didn't even have shoes. But anyway, the little girl pointed at my mother and said, "Look, Mommy, a baby maid." And for my grandmother, this was the last straw. By the end of the month, the family packed up and moved to Atlanta, living with my grandfather's brother until my granddaddy found a job. But the whole point is that in that instant in that store, my mama was a baby maid. And this is what made my grandparents move. Just that inevitability. Kind of remember that, okay? It's important. I never told you this, but about a year ago, I had an incident. Not a breakdown, just an incident. I didn't tell you because you have enough to think about. Don't get mad about that. I'm okay. Andre and I were walking nearby to People Street because we had installed my show at the Hammond's house. These dolls are very ornate, almost Baroque, lots of raw silk and tulle. The process was grueling because the topsy-turvy dolls were displayed on movable platforms that I built myself. Andre helped me, but it was hard work, and I was about cross-eyed by the time we got it all set up. So the main thing is that I was exhausted. We were on Abernathy on our way to buy fish sandwiches from the Muslims, which is another factor. I was hungry. Near an intersection, we passed a little boy walking with his mother. He was teensy and adorable. Kids that size always kept my attention. If things were different, maybe we would have a boy that age. His mother looked young, maybe 21, but you could tell she was conscientious, just from the way she held his hand and chatted with him while they walked. Clear as water, I could imagine myself in her position, feeling his sweet little hand, answering his bright-eyed questions. When they got closer, he smiled. Those little straight teeth, and I felt a jolt of recognition. That little boy looked like you. A voice in my head that was not my own said, "A baby prisoner." I clamped my hands over my mouth and looked to Andre, who seemed confused. "Did you see him? Was it Roy?" Dre said. "What?" I feel embarrassed even writing this, but I'm trying to explain what happened. Next thing I knew, I was on my knees on the sidewalk in front of a water hydrant, embracing it like a small, stout child. Andre knelt beside me, and we probably looked like we were having some sort of domestic dispute. He peeled my hands off the hydrant, one finger at a time. Somehow we made it to the fish place. He called Gloria, then he grabbed me by the shoulders. "You cannot let this destroy you," he said. Finally, Gloria showed up and gave me one of those nerve pills that all mothers stash in their pocketbooks. Long story short, I slept it off, whatever possessed me. I recovered and went to my opening at the Hammonds' house the next day. I can't really explain it, but the idea got inside me like a hookworm. So I dolled it. I stripped the doll out of the John Johns and used wax cotton to make a diminutive pair of prison blues. Dressing the doll in these clothes was just as difficult, but it felt more purposeful. In the baby clothes, it was only a toy. In the new way, it was art. That's the doll that won the contest. I hate that you had to hear it from your mother and not from me. When I was interviewed on stage, I didn't tell them about you. They asked about the inspiration, and I talked about my mother being a baby maid, and I spoke about Angela Davis and the prison industrial complex. What is happening with you is so personal that I didn't want to see it in the newspaper. I know you will understand what I mean. Yours, Celestial.
Dear Georgia, a few months ago you said you were dream adjacent, but it looks like you have been living your real dream behind my back. The shop? That was my idea. But your fantasy involved galleries, museums, and white glove installations. Don't treat me like someone who doesn't know you. I understand what you're saying, and I understand what you're not saying. Are you ashamed of me? You are, aren't you? You can't go to the National Portrait Museum and tell them that your husband is in prison. You could, actually, but you won't. I empathize. It's a lot to get used to. Before, we were living that Huxtable life. But now, where are we? I know where you are, and I know where I am, but where are we? Send me a picture of the doll. Maybe I'll like it better when I can actually see what it looks like. But I must tell you that I don't care much for the concept. And even if what you said in the article is true, about how you want to raise consciousness about mass incarceration, let's say this wasn't bullshit, please explain to me what a baby doll is going to do to help anybody in here. Yesterday a dude died because nobody would give him his insulin. I hate to break it to you, but no amount of poupées is going to bring him back. Look, you know I have always supported you and your art. Nobody believes in you more than me. But don't you think you crossed the line here? And to not even tell me or mention me? I hope that prize from the National Portrait Gallery means a lot to you. That's all I'll say. You know, if you're not comfortable telling people that your husband, an innocent man, is incarcerated, instead you can tell them what I do for a living. I've been given a promotion. I push a trash can around Mars, picking up garbage with giant tongs. It's a sweet gig because Parson Prison is also an agribusiness site. Before, I was picking soybeans. Now I work inside. And although I'm not wearing a white shirt and tie, I do have a white jumpsuit. Everything is relative, Celestial. You still have your upwardly mobile husband. And here, I'm white collar. No need to be ashamed. Your husband, I think, Roy. P.S. Was Andre there? Were the two of you going around telling everybody how you've been best friends since you were two little babies taking a bath in the sink? Was everybody saying how cute that is? Celestial, I may have been born yesterday, but not last night.
Dear Roy, your last letter upset me so much. What can I say to make you see that this isn't about shame? Our story is too tender to explain to strangers, don't you see? If I say that my husband is in prison, that's all anyone can focus on, not me or my dolls. Even when I explain that you are innocent, all they remember is the fact that you are incarcerated. Even when I tell the truth about you, the truth doesn't get delivered. So what's the point of bringing it up? This was a special occasion for me, Roy. My mentor flew in from California, and even Janetta B. Cole showed up. I couldn't bring myself to talk about something this painful on the microphone during the Q&A. Maybe it was selfish, but I wanted to have my moment to be an artist, not the prisoner's wife. Please write me back. Yours, Celestial. P.S. As for your remarks about Andre, I will not even dignify that silliness with a response. I'm sure by now you have come to your senses, and I am accepting your apology in advance.
Dear Georgia, according to Walter, I am being a jackass for not looking at things from your side of the bed. He says it's unreasonable for me to expect that you would constantly reiterate that your husband is incarcerated. He said, "This ain't the fugitive. You want her to go running after the one-legged man? See why we call him the Ghetto Yoda. He says that your potential for advancement in your profession will be greatly diminished by having your brand associated with incarceration, which evokes troubling stereotypes